Yeah. Chad, you want to hear a funny story?
I do.
Okay, so this is another one related to that conference I got back from, the Workbench Con, the conference
yes.
with the awkward name. So, and I forgot to tell you this because this this was such a moment. And there's the story I'm going to tell you, and then there's an after story that I think is also interesting.
Okay.
So on the opening day, the breakfast, you know, you go there and there's everybody's sitting at the tables in the huge banquet room, and they have the keynote address. And this was delivered by Joni Sprague, who is a YouTuber, kind of a TV personality, also does Instagram, all these things. She's real nice, real friendly. And so I thought, oh, this is great. She's going to be doing the keynote. And so she did her keynote speech, and it lasted maybe 15 minutes. It was a real heartfelt, you know, story about how she went from rags to riches and all of this stuff. And then they bring on an ad. I mean, this is basically like they bring on this spokesperson from this a clothing company. I guess they sell clothing for workers. I have never heard of this company until this thing, but they acted like everybody just naturally knew who they were. So she's like, well, welcome on to the stage, the woman representative from the X company, whatever the name of it was. And she comes out there, yay. And everybody's like, well, okay, what is this? What's she going to talk about? I've got prizes for everybody. We're going to play a trivia contest about our company. And first of all, nobody wants these crappy prizes. You know, it's like the ill-fitting t-shirts and the weird shit that they give away at this stuff. So everybody's kind of like, okay, this is a way to bring the house down after this initial keynote speech. And I'm looking at my watch. I'm thinking, wow, we still have like 45 minutes before this keynote is supposed to end. So the first question out of the gate was, like, she holds up one of these hats that they sell, like a stocking hat. And she says, okay, what is the actual color name of this hat? And I mean, it was brown. I mean, my thought was, well, it's brown. Well, there's just crickets in there. Nobody's saying anything. Finally, this one guy in the front raises his hand. And he says, UPS brown. And she's like, no, but are there any other guesses? Yay. And she's really trying to hype this, and nobody understands what's going on. And this goes on and on like this. And people are like trying to Google answers maybe, or go to their website. And the questions are so weird and obscure. They're like, what year was the company founded? And so people are like throwing up their hands, 2016, 1985. I mean, it's just like all over the place. Nobody knows it. This goes on for 45 minutes, and you could just feel the awkwardness. This was an example, and I talked to other people afterwards about not reading the room. She had no idea that this thing was just getting to super cringe level. These question after question of these weird, obscure trivia questions about their product that personally I had never heard of. Apparently they sponsor Instagrammers and stuff. So that was all funny, and we all had a good joke about it. But just yesterday, a guy who was there, who I actually sent you a video of his yesterday, but he has a second channel where he just talks about things, and Drew Witt is his name. And so he did this video about that keynote speech, and I didn't think anybody else would bring it up. I thought it was pretty funny, but he had this interesting angle. It was like, what if that company was just trolling everybody in that? Because think about it. You're giving basically a 45-minute ad to a bunch of influencers who do nothing but interrupt people's viewing experience. And I thought, oh man, the irony of that is so perfect that all of these people in this room were complaining about how horrible this long ad was when you're doing the exact same thing.
Oh, the irony.
I thought it was just brilliant. I thought, wow, that is a good take on it. I would like to believe they were intentionally trolling everybody, but I don't think that was the case.
So, Can I ask what the color was? What did the color end up being?
I have no idea I don't remember what the name of it was. You know, like cardboard brown or something, because they all have you know, how companies establish their own
cute names. This is medium mocha, everyone. Yeah. Medium mocha. Do you want to take a note and write that down?
And they're trying to give away shitty prizes to a bunch of people, half of whom are probably millionaires already and don't need that junk.
I will say they taught a whole bunch of influencers the history of their company, and they got a bunch of hits on their website while they did it. So to your point of it being effective, yeah, right. I guess
but it's like effective. Nobody really wanted to play along. It was just so weird. I've never seen a keynote like it. I have no idea how they managed to worm their way into that. It was just
so it was like it was a live ad spot. It was a live yes. sponsored segment.
Yes, exactly.
In a
conference.
Is this going to be a thing?
I don't know. Considering also, you know, we paid so much to go to this thing. Listen, opening day keynote is an ad.
So let's talk about paying to go to WorkbenchCon, because one of the other things that was brought up in the What Works video was that you were there with a regular lanyard.
See, I didn't even know that they had they set up this like class structure apparently at this conference where I didn't notice that there's some people get a white lanyard and some people get a black lanyard, and I was the black lanyard. The white lanyards are like the elites. These are like the people who are brought in, they're paid for, I assume, flight, room, board, everything. And just so that they can give a talk on something, you know, talk about how to make a thumbnail. And so, and they get like a private lounge, and, you know, because it's pretty hectic to have to
go in there and
give a speech for an hour. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they need those free drinks and stuff just to get away from the riffraff.
Mm-hmm. No, I get it.
So I was part of the riffraff, but I didn't even know that this was a thing. I didn't know that they had their own special class of people. I didn't know that this existed. I thought the people just came there and did their speech and left. But
well,
anyways,
they were surprised that you weren't even speaking there and that you were sitting in the back with a regular old mortal black lanyard. And they were like,
I don't have anything to say. What am I going to tell these people? I don't know anything about social media.
You know about workbenches, and that's the name of the conference.
Well, if they'd asked me to talk about something related to woodworking or something, yeah. But I don't know. I shouldn't complain too much. It was a fun conference. It was great to meet all of the people that I know, you know. But the conference itself is kind of a little needs work.
The video you were speaking about, I was going to bring it up too, but since you did mention it, it was called The Truth About Steve Freaking Ramsey. And it sounds great because you're like, ooh, gonna get some dirt on Steve.
It's interesting
because obviously, you know, everybody who does know you is like, yeah, of course, Steve's a really good, down-to-earth guy. But I read all the comments, which most of them were supportive. Let's say 80% of the comments were certainly like, yeah, Steve's great. I've met him and Steve really is great. And there was one which was one of the top comments. It was like, oh, he wasn't a jerk. But it was in a very friendly way. And he said that was because, like, considering that you're from California. So it was one of those people that judge people off of where they live. Yeah.
Yeah. Geographical bias.
How do you put up with it over there in California?
Yeah, I know. People have a weird perception of California because, you know, a lot of this is brought on by, it's like the Florida man syndrome. You know, everybody has this idea of Florida. Well, I'm sure much of Florida is fine. And you hear the weird stories about California, but I don't know. It's like any other place, really.
It really is. The last comment, which was probably one of the top comments, and I just wanted to share it, was someone just being like, yeah, Steve is just a regular guy, and he puts his pants on just like the rest of us. And it was like, I don't even know what that means or why Steve, if he were to reach all of this success, would put his pants on differently.
Well, you know, they say you put them on one leg at a time, but sometimes I put them on both legs at a time. If I'm sitting on like the edge of the bed, just
jump into them. Right.
Yeah, I kind of roll back and pants are on.
But one would technically come out before the other.
I guess so, yeah. There is going to be, it would be really hard. It would be like a once in a lifetime event if they both came out. It would be momentous.
I have to ask you a question. Have you ever been an escort? Not an escort. Escort's not the word I'm looking for.
I get paid good money for those that escorting.
That's just on the weekends, Chad. A volunteer. No, there's a formal word. A chaperone, I believe, is the term. I am going to become a chaperone for the first time for my child's kindergarten class on their class trip to a maple syrup place.
Oh, okay. So you're like the room mother.
I'm in charge of... Right. Yeah. I'm in charge of some children. I did it because it sounded like a good idea and I was interested in having some maple syrup. However, now I'm wondering... What have I gotten myself into?
Really, in your life choices.
Have you ever done a school trip or volunteered in that way? Oh, gosh, what do you do?
I did a lot. Well, you know, I mean, Wyatt was homeschooled for the most part, but then...
That's right.
In kindergarten, he went to actual school, and I did. I was very involved in that because I was working from home doing graphic design, so it was easy for me to... you know, volunteer to do these kind of things. And I enjoyed it. The kids kind of liked me. I was not, you know, mean or anything. I did get in trouble one time by like the teacher because I had, the kids were out in the little playground and I was grabbing Wyatt and I would grab him by the hands and swing him around, you know, kind of like float him off his feet. And another kid wanted me to do that. I was like, yeah, okay. And then the teacher's like, no, you can't do that. And I'm glad she did, really. I probably, it was not a good idea for me to swing somebody's kid, you know. But that was the only incident.
But if the kid's asking, then therefore that's pretty much, I think, consent.
if
there's
flying,
a separated shoulder or something.
Yeah, you got it coming. You had it
right.
coming.
You had it. Literally asked for it. I'm very excited. I'm excited about the responsibility. I just want to make sure that all the kids come home with their fingers and gloves and things
like
that.
Well, there'll probably be other parents there too, right?
There are. Yeah. There are. Apparently, there's like it's a little group of like seven kids. So I don't know.
It'll be a good gathering for the parents to talk, really, especially when the kids are off playing and doing stuff.
You That's guys what it is,
together.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you like mingle and have cocoa,
you know, whatever. All of the like IRL friends that I used to have, I don't have anymore because our friendship were solely based on Wyatt
or social events like involving going somewhere.
Everything was, we knew our whole friend base was surrounding children, and so we knew the parents, and that was the only thing really we had in common were the kids. And then, you know, once Wyatt went off into college and everything, we didn't stay in contact with any of these people, and that's why now we don't really, you know, have any friends in the real world. It's like, well, I guess we should have some more kids or something so we can get some friends.
You can just find some or adopt some or you really could.
I got a hot tub.
You really do. I today would be a good day for a hot tub here. It's getting warmer here, and finally we're starting to get through the wintertime and whatnot. And I was thinking about how nice it would be to have a hot tub. And then I was thinking about you having a hot tub and you probably really appreciating it. But I'm wondering, do you ever miss like all the seasons?
Well, I mean, we do have them. I mean, like now we're totally in the rainy season. I don't miss snow and super cold weather. I don't like that at all. I think I grew up in it and I didn't like it then. I didn't like driving in it. And so, I don't miss it.
Yeah. So you don't appreciate the warm weather more? Or that's just something people who live in cold territories tell themselves to make life in their frigid climates more bearable?
We have all four seasons. Well, every place has four seasons. They just vary. The swing, the difference between winter and summer isn't as great. You know, it's still rainier and cooler in the winter here. And then in the summer, it's warmer and drier. But it's just not to the extremes that you would have.
Extremes, indeed. You know, it's incredible. Storms. Yes, what people will tell themselves to like just adapt to a situation. They will literally make, everyone should experience, you know, living in a lava, like in a pool of lava. Everybody should, because those people are living in a pool of lava and dying, and they're like, everybody should do it. And it's just the way their brain makes their situation a little better. I realize that now. I realize that after like 4 months of winter. And today was the day that I called my pool guy and made an appointment to open the pool. And I put it in the calendar, and Melissa called me right away, and she was so excited, and Riley got up and almost cried when she found out. We were so happy, and we put it in the calendar, and we're so happy. I put a million emoticons after pool opening.
Pool day.
And I realized, and then we were all going about, it's like, yeah, it's the weather and the snow's going away. And I realized that we love the snow now because like we're on the other side of it and we're starting to look forward to the whatever. And I started listening to all of the words that was coming out of my mouth. And I realized that we tell ourselves a whole bunch of things to like get through all the situation. It's ridiculous that I should have to close my pool. People over there don't close their pools,
no.
do they?
No. But, you know, I think we romanticize these things always in the future and in the past. It's in the present. We don't really tend to enjoy what we have as much, I think.
Very true.
You know, we always want to, oh, I'm looking forward to the next snowstorm. I'm just going to curl up with a good book. But then it comes time, you're like shoveling snow. You're like, damn, it's cold out. And, well, I guess I should read now, but I don't really want to curl up. I don't know.
Yes.
We have this, but you know, we have where I live, I guess it's what they call a Mediterranean climate. You know, it's temperate. We don't really get a whole lot of really hot days, and we don't get super cold days, you know, so it's always, and I like that, you know, because I can put up with the hot weather much more than I can cold. If it, you know, especially when it drops below freezing, I can't take that kind of temperature. It just chills me to my bones.
What about when there's so much fire that the sky turns red?
Yeah,
is that
that's bad. Hopefully we won't have that now for at least this year because we have had so much rain this year with all the atmospheric river events.
Oh, see, I'm so confused. I don't know the difference. Like, is that different
than
rain?
It just atmospheric rivered yesterday. No, I think it's just a new word for storm.
Yeah.
They used to say, well, we had storms.
Have you gone through and actually done a Google search for like?
Yeah, there's some technical thing. They're calling it the way the air swoops down, and I don't know.
But you're calling them out. You're calling them out for just trying to find a new term to impress us with.
Yeah, I think so. Something that's been around probably. It's probably just a normal way storms work.
Yeah,
it's not fun to just say, oh, it's a big rainstorm's coming. Like, find another word.
Yeah. Yeah, I did the Google Trends search for atmospheric river, and it just like, there's nothing until like a couple of years ago, and then it just like, pew, skyrockets. Everybody starts using atmospheric river.
Oh, it's an important thing. I was using my computer, and it asked me to save something, and for the first time ever, it just automatically saved it into the cloud. I had to click a button to save something on my computer, and it felt really weird. I do fully understand why the cloud thing is a thing, but I kind of miss having things on my computer and whatnot. And when you store all like your footage and all of the stuff, you must probably have.
Yeah.
How many drives do you have? How many terabytes of information do you have sitting somewhere?
Well, every time
Every
time I fill one up, I just get a new one, and the size of these drives is getting bigger and the cost is less. I can get like a 5 terabyte drive for under $100. So I just plug it in and I just dump everything onto them. And I try to have them organized by year. But usually lately, because these drives are getting so big, I haven't been filling them up every year. So now I have like 2020 through 2023 or something, you know.
Have you thought about doing anything with your library of footage?
Yeah, I don't know. I use it for B-roll. It's really handy to have 15 years of B-roll whenever I need to show just a clip of me cutting a board a certain way. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember there was a video. Although usually I end up just downloading it from my YouTube channel because it's kind of quicker that way than trying to sort through and find a specific clip. But my first couple years on YouTube, I deleted everything. All I have are just the final versions, which are on YouTube. And then I've got a version now on my computer. But I thought, I'll never need this. It was so funny because it's like the early days of silent movies, you know, they would shoot the movie and then they're like, well, we'll never need that again. Just destroy it.
We edited it into one final version. Why would we need the raw footage for any particular reason?
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. I mean, that's actually what makes it very, very special. But what you should do is you should go through and take a 1 second clip out of all of the B-roll footage
in order and then put one video together with a like a 1 second clip of you cutting something in all of your videos over the past however many years you've been doing
this. See, I wonder if I could work with this. We should probably workshop this because I've got my 15-year anniversary on YouTube is coming up this May. And I'd like to do like a 15 years. The title of the video is, you know, something like, what 15 years of YouTube looks like or something, you know.
Well, you're a great example because you're before and you're after, as you pointed out. It's like, hey, 15 years, of, I'm going to be looking healthier.
No, I think it would be fun to just do some sort of a retrospect. You're just looking back and kind of thinking, not just of myself, but YouTube itself, of how it's changed over 15 years. But this is the kind of project that could easily get out of control. So I probably should focus it more on my
Unless experience. You put boundaries in it. Yeah. And figure out what it is that you actually
And I've only
to
got
say.
A couple of months to do it. I keep thinking about it and I haven't done anything.
Oh. And now things are going to start ramping up because you're going off to all these conferences with your black lanyard. But...
This is what I actually started a Word document here, and it's got what I've learned from 15 years of making YouTube videos. That's as far as I got. But I've got the document ready to go if I ever want to write anything more on it.
I think that says a lot. That's really deep, though, if at the end you're like, and here it is. This is what I've learned. And it's just nothing.
It's just blank.
It was our journey the entire time. Speaking of YouTube, and I wanted to ask you about this because I started thinking about how much time I spend in a week of work that actually now goes to YouTube versus how much goes to like all of the other stuff in my life. And I wanted to ask you the same thing because I know you don't really have a regular cadence of your videos and whatnot anymore. Where, how much time during an average week do you dedicate to the world of YouTube?
It's less than it used to be, but it comes in spurts. Like right now, I'm trying to edit together a video for this shop stool that I made. And it's requiring a lot because, you know, I'm trying to do these longer form videos. And so just in the past 2 days this week, Monday and Tuesday, I've worked probably 10 hours on just on editing. And then it's hard for me to also consider other aspects of YouTube. Like I do reply to comments, I do read them, and I don't know, I spend a lot of time working on podcasts and other things too, so it's a hard one. But I don't think I devote as much time to YouTube. It's something that kind of eats at me a little bit because I think I should be spending more time on YouTube.
But I realized it was important to step away from my like week or days being acknowledged or being like checked off if it involved something. Say, I realize how many years I've gone with like an average week. The biggest deliverable would be like, what is the YouTube video going to be? And how does that, whatever? And we realize after so many years of making money off of that, it's hard to start to disassociate that mindset from your workflow. And it's taken a long time. And I realize it took to the point where I was doing very, 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 very little work on YouTube stuff and a whole bunch of other work on other things for me to actually realize how I was still thinking that the most important thing every single week was like, what's the quote unquote YouTube video going to, like this weird mentality that we had back in 2016, 2017, whatever, even up to just a couple of years ago, maybe even the pandemic, maybe threw that for a loop where it was like, hey, wait a minute, our lives shouldn't be surrounding content. And it's interesting because at the beginning of this year, I mentioned about like not wanting to have my life set, like even up to this point, I still question like, how does my life and content not be so intertwined? And it was fascinating to speak to JJ, who like once you're immersed in it this much and you want to stay at the pace that JJ is doing it, you have to fully immerse yourself into it. And there's,
when you're doing the weekly videos, you definitely can get into that cadence. I know I even made a video about that 5 or 6 years ago, maybe it was even longer, about my weekly schedule, how it works. And it was very structured, you know, because I knew I wanted to post a video every Friday, and it's a project video every Friday. So, you know, I would describe how it really started on Saturday, thinking about the project, starting to design the project. Sunday, I would refine it, maybe get materials. And then through the week, I'd start building the project, editing all the way up, all these tasks until Friday, released the video, started all over on Saturday. So it was a 7 day a week thing. And I did that for a few years, but it was kind of easier in a way when you have kind of a structure in place that you can do that, where you just kind of get in the rhythm of that. And I could feel how JJ has that momentum. And for whatever reason, it just got, and I think really where that changed mostly for me is when I decided to do my online courses, because I knew I couldn't devote all the time to YouTube. And then once I stopped devoting so much time to YouTube, it became easier and easier to devote less time to YouTube.
Yes. And that seems like a trapping almost, like you feel like you shouldn't be doing that. But then once you start to do it, you realize how healthy that mindset is, because it's not like it's an unhealthy mindset to do the whole hustle thing, but you realize to keep going at that pace or that clip and not have the ability to like really look. I look at a week now and I have to think about distribution in parts of the world, which,
right.
We have three companies, we have a team, we have people who, like, it's so much more than what's currently trending on YouTube and what our next video is going to be and how it pertains to views and even income and whatnot, because there's so many other things which much like should be occupying our time, because it clearly is the thing that provides all of the money.
Is there a part of your brain though that still kind of thinks, well, YouTube is my main gig? Because for me, I still think that, and that's why I still have this guilt when, you know, I look in the last video I posted was 3 weeks ago and I think, oh man, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And
yeah.
I don't know, it's just hard to get past that.
I realize that sooner or later the memberships thing will be a thing. Because it'll truly help us find the shape and the culture of who our audiences actually are. Not this, I think I have this feeling towards the 2 million subscribers at Clean My Space, because I love them all so much. I don't know how y'all came about, but like they're all there, and all of these other businesses came because, in a way, because of that.
Yeah.
None of the other businesses which ended up becoming incredibly successful would have ever been in the position they are unless it came from this one place. So you always have this soft spot. It's like a kid. You always have this soft spot.
Right.
But at some point, and they say the same thing in business, where it's like, yeah, you got to treat them as your kid and da-da-da-da, but like you also just need separation from that. You need to understand that it's a group of people, and it's a deceiving group of people, because we've been made to think that because there's so many and you've built up over such a... that either they have a say of what's going on,
yeah,
or you have a say of what's going on. And then it becomes this like muddled soup of like, I'm not too sure if I should be giving you what you want, or if you guys are watching me fulfill what I want and you're going to stick around. And now I also have to worry about whether me doing what I want to do continually is going to also continue to pay the bills, or do I have to be mindful of the thing that's going to keep this, whatever it is, going.
Yeah.
And then, so as soon as you start getting into these like confusing mindsets of what's my product? Am I trying to appeal to these people? And that's why I like the membership thought, because it literally does separate the people who are willing to spend 99 mm-hmm. cents a month or whatever. And so long as there's like value, so long as what they get is what you're offering. And I guess what I'm in a roundabout way getting at is my feelings towards the subscribers is the way that I'm trying to gear my thought towards what our audience is, but not doing it in a disingenuous way, because there's a lot of YouTube shtick that comes with that audience. And it kind of confuses, like you get our super fans in there, but you also get, you know, a bunch of people who are, you know, some people who hate watch, people who love trolling you. So it's not, and you listen to that as much as you listen to like everything else, and it becomes this weird, and I certainly don't want to create an echo chamber. However, I realize, and Melissa has also realized this, where it's like, you talk differently. You realize that when you're in your courses or you're talking to someone
yeah.
who, like on a one-on-one, like you can just talk to, you don't
you can
need
actually
to
be yourself. Yeah.
Cause you're not in a quote unquote commercial kind of trying to like get people off to another thing.
Yeah. Everything on YouTube, if you're doing YouTube for a living, everything you're doing is self-promotional, really. every video you make is somehow you're just trying to lure people into your channel to watch it, to subscribe. And I think that the reason why I still see YouTube as kind of, it bothers me when I don't post as much, is when I see the AdSense revenue goes down. It's very directly correlated to how often you post. That AdSense revenue goes down dramatically if you're only posting one video a month or one every 3 weeks. I mean, it's huge. When they say you post on a regular basis and the more you post, the better. And YouTube will say, no, that's not true. You should just put quality stuff. Well, not everybody is like, you know, Practical Engineering, who could do like a once a month video and get, you know, millions of views on it. That I'm sure the AdSense revenue on that is fine. But for most people, if you want to see that AdSense revenue increase or at least maintain where you like it, you just got to keep feeding that beast.
And now that beast is kind of exhausted because YouTube's kind of clearly moving. Like, I mean, they would much rather have people just paying for the stuff as they need to in a subscription-based model, as opposed to just earning all their money through trying to appeal to all of these brands and trying to appeal to creators. And the soupy mess that we're in for content, and like how you, like, I think people are ready to like, no more ads, no more sponsored inclusions. I'm willing to give you $1.99 a month to just be Steve Ramsey,
right?
Like the day before, where I could subscribe to your YouTube channel and get that same value. I appreciate that it's not free, because the vast majority of content can just be created by like AI these days and whatnot. And that's again why I think they're going to move away. Obviously, they're going to move away from ad rev and needing to rely upon.
Do you think more and more YouTubers are going to start moving towards the membership model? Or do you think that it's going to develop this sort of taboo that, you know, that's really sleazy to do that kind of thing?
It's funny because we were talking about Netflix, and I see it being the same way. Or Spotify is an even better example. Like, I went to Spotify, or I went to like whatever, because I wanted commercial free music. Satellite radio messed it up because they the DJs and started putting commercials in and da da da. However, Spotify, to the point, as soon as you stop paying for the ads, you just listen to music, and you get endless amounts of access to music, and I'll happily pay. They could literally jack that bad boy up to $29.99 a month. I'll happily pay it, because it offers what I think YouTube sees that's their gig. Mm-hmm. Like, how is TikTok going to compete with that? How is TikTok going to compete with being able to enable creators to have their own, what you sent through the podcast thing? Now they have a podcast tab. They have a shorts tab.
I don't even. It's strange. YouTube's wanting podcasts on the platform.
Sure. Because what they're trying to do is stop people from being like, go check out my podcast somewhere else. And the other thing is, now your program, you don't need Udemy or all of these other programs anymore, because YouTube's going to have their own product within a year. I guarantee you.
You might be onto something here about YouTube kind of eventually switching to a subscription model. I know they, of course, we talked about last week, YouTube Premium, which we both have and highly recommend, you know, to eliminate the ads. But I think that they're going to, they're in a position now where it's like Hulu. You can do Hulu, the regular, the cheap ass Hulu with ads and everything, and that's like their teaser rate, you know, like $8 or something. But it's a ridiculous experience. You don't get anything, and nobody, I don't think, would really want that. If you're going to do that, just get cable TV or something. So most people are paying for these premium services, and we're already accustomed to paying, you know, a monthly fee for services. It's just, I think it's going to be harder for YouTube to get to that place, because they have such a long history and culture of free video.
Yep. But you can see the seeds that are being planted, and you can see that it's unlike some of the other efforts that they were doing. And from a creator standpoint, especially knowing the back end of what Melissa and probably you go through as well, where it's like you're the person who literally is the person, so how you talk, how you act, and how you speak on camera,
you realize when that starts being different. You've done it enough to know what a podcast feels, and hence why you're doing podcasts, right? Like, you just love the just casual cadence of like, what, because you understand what it's like to talk on a YouTube video. And when you do that for as long as Melissa has, or you have, or whatever, like, you get so used to like speaking a certain way.
Yeah.
And knowing that on the other side of that camera was this avatar that you just like so like understand and whatnot. And I can see how creators get exhausted trying to make their content everything for everyone. And it came to me recently to strip all of the best practices out of our videos. We're just going to start doing it. Literally going to go back to basic, how to clean your toilet. Hi, I'm Melissa from Clean My Space, and today we're going to clean a toilet. There's going to be no ads. There's going to be no calls to action. The only calls to action in the videos at the end are going to be, if you want to subscribe for more videos like this, you can click the subscribe button. And if you want some inspiration or motivation, you can join the whatever, Clean My Space community, join our memberships program, where for 99 cents a month, we will produce videos which won't sound like this nonsense that you're getting on YouTube. We realize that we have a bounce rate of 90%. 90% of the people want to come, figure out the cleaning issue that they had that day, and then move on. They don't want to be subscribers. They don't need more cleaning information. And when you jam your videos for the 90% of people who just want to come, learn how to clean the toilet, and then bounce, maybe get some branding so that maybe next time they're cleaning something, they remember, hey, it's the same people that are doing it. But these people got me there, and these people delivered the information right away, a la TikTok, like just quick information, but it was very informative, and they showed all the things they needed to do, and they didn't do all this, you know, subscribe and like my other videos and go to my website and join my thing and follow me on Twitter. Nothing. Everything is now here. And all I can worry about is just being me. And if you like my free stuff, and if you want the information and you want the tips, those are all for free. They always will be. You can subscribe and get those videos on a regular basis. Go and enjoy them. And then if you want to have a little bit more accountability, or if you want a personal connection, if you want someone to ask the whatever, we have this over here. It's only $1.99. It's only 99 cents a month. And if you are willing to pay $59.99 a year to have your heated seats work in your car, I submit you will pay $10 a month to watch PewDiePie's videos exclusively for people where PewDiePie knows he's speaking to like that cream of the crop audience.
So let me ask you this. If you charged for your membership, say a dollar, it's like, that's probably one where people would, yeah, sure, why not? I'll pay a buck for the membership thing. I'll get the live stream and all that. Have you done any like surveys or anything? Do you think you would get enough people to, because even if you had, to me, getting like Patreon, getting, you know, over 100 people was pretty much a challenge.
And yes.
If I'm only making $100 a month at a membership, it's not going to be worth my time, I think. Although I do think that and I'm still pursuing the membership option myself, because I think it's more, if it was financially lucrative, it would be much more motivational than making YouTube videos, especially when I look at that AdSense revenue. That AdSense revenue is hardly a motivating factor for me to make videos anymore.
Yeah, and it's going to get progressively worse. I mean, there's literally more ads going on your videos and you're being paid less for them. And that represents people learning or being educated or being marketed to a product which you have no control over anyways. Mm-hmm. I see it quite like our website just recently. We removed all the ads. Mm. We were getting X amount of dollars for having the ads, but I would load the page up and I'd have four ads. And quite often the same ad.
Yeah.
Bank. Of the bank I just literally visited?
Yeah.
I understand that apparently this tracking is accurate and whatnot, but I came to the website and I was trying to find a piece of information. So our new North Star is, I don't care about a couple $1,000 a month in advertising revenue. It's literally cheapening our website, and all of that revenue indicates people who are clicking off to go do something else anyways. Yeah. Go learn about a car, go buy something.
I think that's a good attitude to have. I see this a lot in the woodworking space with YouTubers, mostly within the past few years, who started out maybe doing some woodworking videos, the hey guys, here I am kind of video. You know, I'm just in a garage, I'm making stuff. Suddenly, they started getting tools sent to them by manufacturers and tool companies. The next thing you know, like within a few months, their channel has changed to basically that's all they do is sell tools. So they're getting, hey guys, here's the latest reviews of these three different brands and links are down. These guys are making a killing on affiliate sales, on sponsorship deals, but they're not really providing, to me, any quality information. I stopped watching channels that I kind of liked because it's just now tool channels. They're just shills for tool companies. And I wonder how long is that sustainable? And what happens when all that sponsorship stuff, or if just kind of the general public feel of that just gets tired of it and moves on? Would you be able to go back to making woodworking projects and how-to videos? I don't know.
Thankfully, YouTube, I think, is going to be there with their arms wide open, because the challenge was, you brought up Patreon earlier. Mm-hmm. A, off-platform. Like as soon as you're going from YouTube to another website of any sort, which isn't YouTube, big problem. You lose, I mean, you're an old school web guy. You're going to lose 90% of your audience. Like, and that's on a very good day. Mm-hmm. And then from there to get the 10% of people who will go from there to actually learn about it, sign up, enter their credit card information, yeah, and then stay signed up and committed moving forward to $1 or $2 or $10. And I do the same thing because it was a wonderful way to support creators and all of the rest. However, it always came across as like, hey, if you want to support me, there's this convoluted way to do it. I really see YouTube benefiting by having their creators monetize on the platform directly outside, mm-hmm, of just the ad rev share, where it's like, no, let's make it be where it's like people have a monthly YouTube bill and it's scaled quite like an old style cable bill is, which, yeah, is like you just get what you want, but now your YouTube experience is curated to you and the content that you're digesting, you're paying for. So it's just way better content. It works way better for the creator because the creator is speaking to people who are direct, because like all the stupid Patreon videos that, I'm sorry, they are not stupid in any way, but you know what I'm saying, the videos that you're putting up on your Patreon page, like you had to trust that the Patreons who were supporting you would go to the Patreon page, to go to the feed, to watch the video, and then you would post something and you'd get like 12 likes. And it's like, is this really an indication of the people who really, really like me?
So I think Patreon is mostly a tip jar. And
it is.
Does YouTube still have the tip jar feature?
They do. They do. And they have Super Chat, and they've experimented a lot with the just here's a donation, here's a tip. And we've gotten just sometimes people can just on a random video leave a comment. And yes, it is. It's a tip jar, and like, yeah, $2, $5, $10. And I'm always surprised how just randomly with our videos, yeah, we will get these people, and not subscribers, not whatever, come by and they will tip. And you see, and that was the point that YouTube has been making on their membership program for the longest period of time. And it was actually the biggest selling feature that Patreon was saying when I spoke to Patreon. I'm sure they said the same thing to you. These people do want to support you. Mm-hmm. These people do want to like give you that support, and they understand that their money going into your pockets is best served. They also now understand that you have to go through all these weird hoops and these strange companies to do it. Now, if YouTube's going to be like, hey, any other people that you like, you subscribe, they set all their own rates. We get a little bit of that. They get a little bit of that, but we are working much more in tune with that. And just you wait until the sponsorship opportunities are just a feed, mm-hmm, in your YouTube channel. You sign into your YouTube channel and you get a messages from the brand message center. Oh, we saw your video and we were interested in whatever. YouTube wants to do that all themselves. They don't want agencies involved, yeah, in that. So of 100%, they'll pull it all. If you want to make your own program, the new woodwork weekend woodworker 3, this, that, and the other, just put it on YouTube, make it a YouTube video, make, yeah, it a $29.99 download, or rent it, or provide it to the people, mm-hmm, who subscribe to your channel for free or whatnot. And it's all on YouTube. I don't need to break out my credit card because I already pay for YouTube Premium. So I'll just plus and add all these features on and just curate my content literally with my wallet. But at least I'll be a lot happier, and content creators won't have to sacrifice their really good content and put you know, horrible like plugs in it and stuff like that. And it'll come down to people who truly want to support that creator will end up putting their money where their mouth is and be like, absolutely, I'll give PewDiePie 99 cents a month, even if I don't watch his videos, just because it's so easy now to do. And it's going to become a thing to do. It's a badge of honor. Now I can go on his page and type in a custom emoticon that no one else can do. Plus, there's a little badge beside my name and I feel way more connected to it. And I'm saying all of this just like facetiously, obviously, but that was the selling point that YouTube was coming to us with. This is what this is the connection that people want. They want to be able to be like, hey, look, I have the custom Steve Ramsey woodworking for Mere Mortals emoticon that only I can use in my comments, and people would love to be a part of that.
Do you use Bandcamp?
I have used Bandcamp.
So I've really been getting into it lately, and that's also a pay to play kind of thing. It can be. It depends upon the creator. So I think it's a great system they have there where you can listen to music, and it's just anybody can post their music on there. Any independent creator, they post music. You can listen to, typically you would listen to one or two times. You get to listen to the song for free, just like Spotify. But then it'll pop up and it'll say, do you want to support this creator for $1? And then you get to keep, so it's an instant download. Plus you get to message the creator directly. Would you do that? So I was, I just set up a budget for myself right now for just $20 a month to just support musicians on Bandcamp. And I like that system and they like it. I know I was talking to, you know, I've been telling you about the Beths for the past couple of years. And I'm a huge fan of theirs. I saw them this past weekend and I had Ben on my podcast. And so I got to talk to him for a long time before the show. And then I got to meet the band and it was just so cool. But I asked him about Spotify. I'm like, tell me, what do you think about Spotify? And he's like, man, it sucks for musicians. And he said that they've been doing really good on Bandcamp because they could sell their albums, CDs, individual downloads. There's all these options of ways that you can support the creators that you really love. And I thought, man, you know, I should do that more often. And so now when I'm looking through Bandcamp, and I've been doing this for a few months now, is that you can search by like local artists. So I'm looking like, okay, who are San Francisco artists? And I can pull them up and I'm listening to their music. And I'm like, man, this is really cool. I really want to support these people who are just trying to make some cool music.
And that's why I think YouTube will manage to wrap it up, because they'll make the experience more enjoyable, because right now it feels like a very disconnected, convoluted way for and creators end up being like, please support. And that was one of the biggest challenges that YouTube has, was making it sound like you're not begging your audience for money and you're just enabling the people who are your audience to support you and not feel like you are begging or asking for money or whatnot. And that's why I think it's important that YouTube does this, because it sets the precedent of, this is how you engage with creators. This is the literally the YouTube supported way. You don't have to go to something else. You can do it here. All their offerings are here. You want to go see their podcast? Their podcast is here. And I get that that gets kind of monopoly-ish.
Yeah.
But then you certainly run a much better chance of attracting someone who is a young content creator who wants to feel like it can do a whole bunch of things and not have to send people to a whole bunch of different places. I think YouTube's going to appeal to that, because TikTok, as much as they can get you a whole bunch of views or a whole bunch of likes, it's hard to build something on there. It's hard to like trust TikTok to care that you're going to continue. And I think this is a really interesting opportunity for YouTube to set up programs to be like, look how much we're trying to make this easier. Like, we were the ones who started this. We've been working in the background on a whole bunch of stuff. And now I think over the next year or so, you're going to see a whole bunch of stuff, which just changes the landscape of how YouTubers speak.
It's interesting to see how YouTube is dividing all of this stuff up. It's almost like they have a plan for it.
Yep.
Because
it's almost like they know what they're doing.
They have the videos and then they added the shorts, and it was a mess because it was all mixed in with the regular videos, but then they separated it. So now your creator has your own tab for shorts and videos. And live streams has its own tab on your channel page. Now they've added podcasts, which is the new thing. And apparently, all it is a playlist. It's just a playlist of certain videos that you dump in there. But because it's the podcast playlist, it will come with additional features, I think, that are specific to podcasts. It's intriguing. The problem is that I guess it's just because the word podcast kind of is a general term these days, because posting to that doesn't mean that it's also going to do. Usually a podcast is related to an RSS feed so that it goes to, you know, Spotify, Apple Music, Audible, all these different places get that whole, the whole thing. But YouTube's podcast means, well, we're calling it a podcast, but basically it's just videos.
A video podcast.
A video podcast, and it's only going to live here on YouTube in that podcast tab. And I think they'll also, and here's the problem, I don't know if this has been addressed yet, is if you post a podcast video, you put it in that playlist, will it also show up in your feed? Because that's why I stopped posting podcast episodes of my podcast on my regular channel, because people hated that, because it was just like, why there's, and it was driving down everything on my channel, because here's an hour long video of just two guys talking, and I, you know, it would get 3,000 views or less, you know.
I would like to think they hopefully learned their lesson through the shorts experiment. Yeah. And may I also just say that we've been doing this podcast long enough that we could go back in time and be like, YouTube's going to mess themselves up because they're concentrating too much on shorts. And I get it. We all fall into that same, the sky is falling mentality. And for a while, like you said, it was confusing. It did whatever. I think they countered it by like literally just turning the view volume up to 10 on shorts and giving them just ridiculous exposure to get people ridiculous numbers to try to attract them over from TikTok and da da da. Since then, clearly they've dialed it down. Yeah. Since then, they've also managed to introduce creators to the concept of having shorts on their channel, but it not needing to be something that you do all the time or you don't have to do
at
all.
And you don't have
to
make a separate shorts channel. I'm so glad I didn't make a separate channel for those. That would have been ridiculous.
They've doubled down on the community tab, and that's staying around. And I just see the amount of integration that they're going to start, like where you're watching a video and they're going to be like, oh yeah, I talked about it in my podcast, and you can click in the video to go somewhere, or like just having it all on the, in the same kind of like ecosphere is so
the hardest thing to do is to get somebody to click away to a different site to watch or to consume some sort of content. I mean, the numbers are so low. If you ever say, hey guys, visit my website for more information, you're going to get like a 0.1% click through on that. You know?
Right. The older generation, I guess ourselves included, find ourselves in a position where that still works, or we have a big enough audience for that kind of still to work. But I'm starting to see it differently now. I'm not interested in advertising all the things that are available, if that makes sense, to like the people who are just looking for one thing. And I also, like I said earlier, Melissa's just been very cognizant of like, it's, you sometimes become detached from who you are when you like have this, like there's the YouTube me and then there's me, and then you stop. You stop having that space where when we got into this podcast, it's like, oh my gosh, we can talk about whatever we want. We don't need to worry about these things. We don't need to worry about people's comments or like how long it takes or like whatever. And you realize as you start getting away from that, how much it just like occupies all your thoughts and your time.
Yeah, it really does. Before we go, I want to do a quick follow-up on my Ticketmaster debacle. Remember I told you I was going to buy tickets to The Cure?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
No, I didn't get tickets to The fucking Cure.
No, you got kicked out 104 times before just frustrated. You know, that sucks, man.
It's a horrible experience. I did everything right. I was on there right on the dot, right on the nose, the time, clicked through the waiting room, into the lobby, and then it comes up and it says, you're 2,000 plus in line. And the plus, what is plus? That could be plus 30,000. Who knows? And so I wait and wait. And then as soon as I get in there, I look at the map of the stadium where they were playing. It's a huge, you know, outdoor amphitheater. And they, it's like it's all grayed out. Everything is gone except for a couple seats here and there. I would click on them as fast as I could and immediately would say, oh, sorry, somebody beat you to that. Oh, sorry. And so then I would start to wait and I would see where others would pop back up because I guess maybe people timed out trying to get their credit card or whatever. You get like 5 minutes, you know, once you pick the thing. So seats were starting to come back up. But there would be like three seats and it wouldn't let me select just two. It's like, oh, we're sorry. You have to get either all three. You can't leave a one seat open. Or it was so ridiculous. And then I would finally get to the point where, oh, okay, it's processing one. And then it would just basically crash. It would say, oops, sorry. Don't worry. It's not your fault. It's ours. Well, yeah, it is. Of course it is. I'm seems doing to be right. And then it would throw me right back out to the beginning of the whole process. And after 30 minutes of this, I was like, screw it. I can't do this. And it wasn't, everything was gone. There has got to be a better system. I would even prefer just a general lottery. Everybody just gets your name in it. There's two pricing levels. Okay, here's the $45 seats or the $150 seats. Pick one of those. We're going to put everybody's name in a lottery. We're going to randomly draw. If you get your tickets, here's your seat you get. It may not be the perfect seat, but it's a seat. I kind of think I would actually prefer that.
Remember back when you used to just be like, I'm going to go to a show. And then you would go and you would buy a ticket and then you would go and watch the show.
See, this is why I really like these smaller independent clubs, man. They're so much better. You get to hear the music. I saw this clip from the Taylor Swift concert. Do you see this thing? Whoa, this is an extravaganza. I mean, she's like, and I don't think it was actually her, but there's just like, the stage is enormous and it juts out into the audience and it's got like a pool of water. I don't know if it was real or if it was digital. I couldn't tell from the video, but she dives into it and then it shows her swimming underwater to one end and then back, and then she goes back to the stage and climbs up this ladder to these clouds, and it's just this, you know, this is what you get when you have this huge multi-million dollar production for these concerts. But it's somewhere, where's the music? It's lost.
Right. I have, the largest concert I ever went to was a U2 concert at the Sky Dome here. And I think it was like 50,000, or maybe not that many, but like 40,000 people. And this was on their Lemon tour, I think it was. And they had a big sparkly lemon on the stage. And they were actually, to their credit, they were one of the first bands to really put on like grandiose like show. And I remember it being like cool, but I never consider it when I think of my concerts.
No.
Because I don't remember any of the songs. I remember like just all the people in the vibe. But yeah. It's like being at like a baseball game. I don't remember one particular moment.
Exactly.
I just remember going to the baseball game. I remember when I went to the urinal and it was a lineup. And I remember when I was struggling to get a drink and I was whatever. And I felt like, oh, it's too hot in here. Oh, no, there's too many people in here. And it's too loud in here. And da-da-da. Versus going to a concert where there's like 35 people and just like listening to all the songs and singing along and enjoying it. It just kind of, I don't know. I get it. Didn't Robert Smith end up being angry or waving his
fist? There was a little bit of fallout from that, not because of Ticketmaster crashing and doing all their shenanigans, but they were charging these outrageous fees. And so here's the deal, because The Cure, Robert Smith of The Cure, was very adamant about keeping the prices reasonable. So when I clicked on it, the highest price ticket you could buy was $135, which is incredibly reasonable for a stadium concert these days. That's the high price. You could get like the lowest price was $35. So that's totally a reasonable ticket price, I think, for like, you know, nosebleed seats. And so there was like, I think, four different price levels ranging from $35 to $135. And he wanted that there. Well, Ticketmaster, they have always had this like surge pricing, and where, you know, if it's a really in demand concert, the prices, they just skyrocket them, they raise them. And so The Cure said, no, we don't want that. We want these fixed prices. So Ticketmaster is like, okay, we'll do that. So what they ended up doing was charging these extra fees once you bought your tickets, and they were showing some of these people who bought the cheapest tickets that their fees were almost equal to the amount they paid for the ticket.
Such a
scam. And so Robert Smith came back. I should say Robert Smith of The Cure came back and kind of threw a fit about Ticketmaster. And
good.
They ended up refunding a lot of those fees to most of the people. Because he was pissed. He's like power to the people kind of guy, man.
100%. It takes a Robert Smith from The Cure to actually to do well. Yeah, and Eddie Vedder. Respect to Eddie Vedder, who was also an early on. Yeah, yeah. You know what? It's crazy that, and you know what the secret is, like you said, either independent acts or wait till the band is like on their last legs. One of the best concerts I saw was like Steely Dan, because they play in like a casino, so you get to sit down on a comfy chair.
Because everybody's old, nobody wants to stand for 4 hours.
You only stand for the exciting songs, and you get like, ugh. And then if you want to sit, like no one judges you and no one's like, oh, what's going on? You can just like leave and go to the bathroom if you want. There's no huge, like, it's what a concert should be. And you sit and you listen to the songs and they, you know, whatever. And it's not about stage show and all the rest. It's just about the music, man.
So I saw like one of my favorite concerts last year. I think I saw 12 concerts last year. And like I mentioned, the Beths was number one, but number two for me, what it might have placed it at number three, I don't remember, was the English Beat. And the English Beat is a band from the early 80s, and they were the ska music, you know. And they had like Twist and Crawl, and I'm blanking on some of their song titles now, but it's just all hits. I remember all of these songs from the 80s. And they played at this, and so they've been touring like for 40 years, and they never stop. They are always touring. That's kind of what they're known for, is like practically 365 days a year they're playing someplace. But so they played up here in Petaluma, which is a small North Bay town, and it's this small little
Petaluma just has a name that does not sound like a large city. It's not like Petaluma, population 740,000 people.
It's like a cow town, you know, and there's a little theater there, this Mystic Theater. And so I went and saw them there, and it was such a cool concert. I was like literally out on the stage. I could rest my arms on the stage. I was like at that front. And there was, I don't know how many people were in there. Several hundred, maybe 400. Just guessing, maybe a little bit more. But man, just to watch those guys just giving it there. They just love playing music. They couldn't have been making a lot of money off of that. There was no big spectacle there. And there's like 7 people in the band too, so they're not making a lot of money when you've got that many people to pay.
They literally are playing, yeah,
but
right.
God,
it
there
really
was so much energy and so much, it was so fun to watch
because they appreciate the people, the 300 people that are there. We had the ability to do the exact same thing with Primus when they came to do the Rush tribute concert, like leaning on the stage and just see. And granted, they probably could have played a much larger venue and whatnot. It was like 1,200 people or something like that. But it was just, you see them playing to people who are just feeding it back. So it becomes kind of like a reciprocal thing where like you get a different,
it does,
like a just a totally different vibe from the entire experience. We're going to have to have a competition to see who has more. How many concerts have been to so far this year?
Two.
Two.
I think. Yeah.
Okay.
And I've got Rob Zombie coming up later in the year.
That's cool.
I think that's all. I think I've got scheduled so far.
So I've done the Doobie Brothers with Michael McDonald. Yeah, you heard me, with Michael McDonald.
That's your dream concert right there.
Oh,
isn't it?
Dude, that really, it really was. Saw China Crisis. If you don't know
China Crisis,
you were around in the 80s.
Yeah.
And another band called The Spoons, which you definitely wouldn't know, but they're a Canadian band. So I've been to 3 concerts so far. I have a 4th coming up. I can't remember off the top of my head what it is. Actually, it's Arcade Fire.
Outside
of that, we'll keep a running tally at the end of the podcast to see who goes to more
concerts.
Sounds
good. All right. Well, I have some other stuff to get to. It'll save it for next week.
Me too. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.